And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Or you can hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is communicating. All of my guests are talking about communicating in one form or another. My first guest explained how and why stories make us better communicators from his book, Tell to Win. We discussed the hidden power of stories. My second guest is the best-selling fiction author, Jeffrey Deaver, and he shared with us how he's going to be writing the new James Bond novel. He was granted permission by the Ian Fleming Foundation. My third guest is a lawyer, an educator, and an author, now works for the FTC. He's best known for his developing the net neutrality theory on the internet, and we discussed his latest book, The Master Switch. My next guest is a medical doctor, where MD stands for multidimensional. She's renowned for her work in health and fitness. We're going to discuss Hollywood's female stereotypes and what that's communicating to our society. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Seeing things differently is what this ophthalmologist's stock and trade is. Dr. Veronica Anderson has parlayed her medical experience into a new career. Determined to become a doctor by the age of 4, she completed pre-med at Princeton University, received her MD with honors after an internship and residency at John Wood Johnson University Hospital at New York's Mount Sinai Medical Center, and she received a fellowship in glaucoma. She's practiced at the Robert Wood Johnson Philadelphia Wills Eye Hospital and is also a fellow at the American Academy of Ophthalmology and a diplomat for the American Board of Ophthalmology. Veronica is multidimensional, as I said. She's a mother, a surgeon, a speaker, a healer, and also a globetrotter. Dr. Veronica, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for being my guest. You know, I love to interview thought leaders in all fields. But before we jump into today's subject about Hollywood female stereotypes, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your history. Because if you were determined to be a doctor by the age of 4, I mean, that's very predetermined at an early age, why did you suddenly take a detour or a turn in your career to become a wellness practitioner and a spokesperson?
Well, I started to realize that the patients I was counseling in my office didn't know anything about how to be well. In America, people know about how to be sick, how to be diseased, how to be survivors, but they don't know how to be thrivers and to be well. And so as an ophthalmologist, as an eye surgeon, I was seeing all people's lifestyle choices and diseases in their eyes. And so I sat counseling day after day on what they need to do with their whole life to try to improve the problem that was going on in their eyes, which was causing them, some of them, to go blind, actually.
Wow. Huh. Well, one of your mantras is living well in all areas of your life. And we've just come out of Oscar season here in California. Many of us were absolutely transfixed by the glitz of the red carpet walk. Also, many of us look at the actresses we view there on the television at those events as sort of the ideal female based on the Hollywood female stereotype. From your perspective, what is Hollywood's dream machine feeding the public about females and femininity?
Well, one thing is that they show that there's only one type that appears acceptable, one type of body, one type of look. When you're looking, you know, Fashion Week's in New York right now, everybody's supposed to be a size 00, a Russian, blonde hair, blue eyes, 6 foot, no hips, no breast type beauty. And that's what women in America are aspiring to. Well, guess what? We all have different body types. Now, we do have an issue with excess weight and obesity in the United States, yes. But when you get yourself into the right mode and to the right size, that's not going to look like Jennifer Aniston necessarily. And so I do marathons. I do yoga. I'm a black belt in Taekwondo.
Wow.
If you look at me, I'm not a size 00, and most people would agree that I'm very fit. But I have hips. I have thighs. I am built like a woman.
All right. Now, Dr. Veronica, in what ways is this stereotype that Hollywood and you mentioned Madison Avenue that they're putting forth, in what ways is this unhealthy for our young women today?
Well, they did a study on body image, and I was like, as I'm running on the treadmill yesterday, 75% of people, 75% of women have a day, every day, where they hate their body.
Wow.
We're walking around, even people who are healthy, even people who are beautiful, are feeling like, I hate what I look like, because what we're aspiring to is something that is 1% of the population all over the world.
All right. So that 1%, I love that statistic. 75% of women have one day that they absolutely just hate their body. So, I guess my next question is, doesn't our perception of what is feminine, what's alluring, hasn't that changed through the years? I mean, what was interesting in John Paul Rubin's time with the Rubinesque women is different than what we have today, right?
It is very different. If you go to museums around the world, if you go to places like the Louvre, you'll see that women are built more, let's call it voluptuous. They don't necessarily have flat stomachs. They have a little bit of extra flesh on them, but they're not obese necessarily. If you look at someone like, let's talk a sexual icon, Marilyn Monroe.
That's where I was going next.
Not a skinny mini.
No, she had hips.
Yes, and everybody thinks, and you know, she was a woman. Okay, so we need to realize that if you look around the world, the images of beauty, the images of what people like, is not necessarily what we're seeing in America today. In other societies, women who are more womanly looking are considered the more attractive ones. Ones that are skin and bones and size 00 are not.
All right. We're talking to Dr. Veronica Anderson, everybody, and we're talking about Hollywood female stereotypes. And I guess that begs the question, Dr. Veronica, how did we move from the Rubinesque, voluptuous type woman to a Marilyn Monroe type of woman to where we are today, which is a more twiggy or, as you said, very thin Russian model type of woman? How did we make that transition?
You know, I just think it's the times that you swing back and forth, but it's been like this for quite a while. I mean, I feel like it's been like that at least all of my lifetime. And, you know, if you look at me, I'm in middle age. I don't look like it necessarily, but I am. And it just seems like Barbie was what we're supposed to look like. And people like Hugh Hefner, who can't seem to act mature, I'm not saying act old, but mature, keep propagating these images that women are supposed to look a certain way. I mean, if you look at, I just saw on TV, the Housewives of L.A. or whatever it is, I try to remember which place it is, it's about to come back on. You look and there's an array of women up there, they're all Caucasian and they're all blonde, even if they're bleached blonde. They all look exactly the same of varying ages. I would put it on somebody like a Hugh Hefner. But if you look around in the world, there are all kinds of beautiful people, men and women of different looks and different body types. And when I say that, I'm not talking Mike and Molly obese body types. I'm talking people who are fit for where they are.
All right. Now, Dr. Veronica, I mean, you mentioned it just a minute ago in one of your answers that you're middle-aged, and boy, if anybody sees a picture of you, they would find that hard to believe. But in what ways is our youth-centric vision of both health and beauty impacting the realities of aging gracefully and aging healthily?
Well, first of all, how people age really has to do with their lifestyle choices. And so if you see people who are looking, let's call it young for their age, most of those people have chosen for years and years and years healthful lifestyle choices. I just told you what I do on a regular basis is just what I do. And I always tell people, look, you need to start evaluating your doctors and see if they're doing the things that you would like them to do. The reason why I started talking about all these type of lifestyle things, because I realized that Western medicine fell woefully short of teaching people these lifestyle issues before they get to being sick. So we need to make sure that we start looking at who do we want as our role model? Who do we want? When we're looking at people with lifestyle, how do we get youth-centric? Well, guess what? I know people who look fabulous who are 70, and people say, oh, my God, you look so young, because they've made choices such that they look fabulous. And age-appropriate fabulous. They're not dried up and shrinked and, you know. Some people have cosmetic procedures, but mild ones. And I'm not against cosmetic procedures. But when you look pulled up because you haven't taken care of yourself or done anything right, you have to question why you're doing that. You can age gracefully. You can actually slow down the aging process by making certain choices of what you eat, what you drink, by exercising, by doing things like yoga and meditation. And guess what? Medical research is now supporting everything I just said.
Oh, that's good. We're talking to Dr. Veronica Anderson. And Dr. Veronica, in that last answer that you gave us, you talked about working with your doctors. But you're on record as saying that the healthcare industry is in transition, and you are an insider to that, no doubt, being a doctor yourself. What is unhealthy about our healthcare industry in America today? Why are doctors leaving the practice in record numbers, and what can we do about it?
I don't know what you can do about doctors leaving in record numbers. It's quite stressful being a practicing physician. You feel like you have to perform like God. After people have abused themselves, then they come in and expect that you fix them. Our system is based on you get sick, the doctor's supposed to make you well. There are other places where, in Eastern medicine, the doctor doesn't get paid if you're sick. That's not how it works here in America. We only get paid if you're sick. Okay, so why do you want to leave? Because you get disillusioned because you feel like you're just, as a doctor, always trying to clean people up from their bad choices. And I'm not, you know, we've been watching Charlie Sheen all over the place now with his addiction and he probably has manic depression and all these other type of things, his narcissistic personality. But guess what? Most of Americans are making bad choices every day with their addiction to food. And yes, you can be addicted to food, and that's why we have a problem with excess weight and obesity. And it's the last thing that we're not supposed to talk about. We're not supposed to say, Oprah's fat, she has an addiction, and let's talk about that.
But we're going to talk about it here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're talking to Dr. Veronica Anderson. And, Doctor, I was going to bring this up next. It's great. You're just leading me into my very next question. And that is, in today's Los Angeles Times, in the business section, Lazarus has a column there. He's talking about putting a tax on junk food, starting first with sodas and then eventually moving into junk food. So I'm going to ask you, is that the solution? You know, is that the best way to do it? If people have been abusing themselves, as you said, eating improperly, eating the wrong types of things, will putting a tax on it change those behavior patterns?
Well, making people pay more does change behavior. Just as we see when gas prices go up, people drive less, which is better for the environment ultimately. So, yes, those things work. However, you have to realize that people have an addiction to fat, to sugar, to all these things that the food industry has going in the things that we are eating every day. So there also needs to be some responsibility on the side of the government to look at what the whole food industry is doing. In addition, if we're going to start taxing people for making bad choices, for having their food addiction, we need to put things in place to help people get out of the addiction. We need to put incentives in place to make people go to the gym, to make people make right choices. So, one, yes, I think that we should charge people for all these things because it's costing me money, you money, as taxpayers now because we're paying for the expensive health care. But on the other hand, we can't just say, okay, we're going to tax you and change your behavior. We need to put in systems, programs, strategies for people to be able to change their behavior.
All right. Well, let's just look at an example where we know something is bad for us. We have taxed it, and it has made an impact, but it hasn't stopped it altogether, and that is